everyone. This is Sony Artisan and host of Disney Junior's Capture Your Story, Miriko, the photo mom. You're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with the one and only Sharky James.
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. Springtime means tax time, and their cloud-based accounting software helps freelance photographers and small business owners get their lives back and get back to shooting by making paperwork a breeze. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 62. Did an alleged killer dupe a photographer? In this episode, was a photographer tricked by an alleged killer? Matt Granger has me on his show Tog Life. Canadian Canon users are paying dearly. Think Tank Photo releases its biggest case ever. Fujifilm is killing it with Instax. And updated drone regulations seem to be on the horizon. All that and more in episode 62 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Mira, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, sister. If you watch Live with Kelly and Michael, The Nate Berkus Show, or Capture Your Story on Disney Junior, you're familiar with Sony Artisan Imagery, Mira Ko. She's a popular workshop leader. Her photography is beautiful. And if you have kids and would like to take better photos of them, head on over to her website for a free photo guide called Capture Your World. You can find that and so much more at miraco.com. That's MERAKOH.com. And I'd like to thank you for joining us here in episode 62 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. All right, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Imagine doing a shoot, feeling really good about it, and then later you learn that you may have been duped, and in a big way. And that appears to be what may have happened to Pennsylvania-based photographer Sunny Joe. Joe specializes in tribute photos depicting people who've passed on, holding hands with their loved ones, often in graveyards, and agreed to photograph 23-year-old Jeannie Diddy, a soldier stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, whose 2-year-old daughter had died after choking on a banana. At least that's what she told him. Well, the photographer was shocked, as you may imagine, to find out recently that his client and her boyfriend have been arrested, and the charges include first-degree murder and negligent child abuse. According to police, Diddy's daughter, Mary Grace, was taken to the hospital with bruises consistent with child abuse and was dead days later. Joe tells Fox News, quote, "I regret that I'm attached to a situation that is so evil and is so vile. She seemed like a grieving mother. I wanted to give her some peace. I was fooled," end quote. Now, people have criticized Joe on social media for these photos, but he says he doesn't regret making them because he considers them a tribute to young Mary Grace's life. He tells the Daily Mail, quote, "The reason I'm open and talking is because the girl was killed brutally and she doesn't have a voice. The whole thing is a tribute to Mary Grace," end quote. Now, as you might imagine, people are really worked up about this. Why would this mother have these photos shot and the composites with her daughter made? Was it to look like a good mother and to try to shape the public's opinion for the trial? Or is she innocent and genuinely grieving the loss of her daughter? Or was it somewhere in between? You just never know. We're seeing more and more of these tribute photos online, I've noticed, and I'm not sure exactly how I feel about it. You know, seeing a composite where the deceased is transparent and made to look ghost-like is just unusual to me. But if it's comforting to whoever's having these photos done and helps them deal with the grief of the loss of their loved one, I guess I can understand that. You know, if I had shot these photos and it turned out that the mom was guilty, I'd feel really creeped out by that, wouldn't you? And especially if I was being used to help her appear less guilty. Next. You know, twice a week, many thousands of you out there listen to me on this podcast, and I greatly appreciate you doing so. Well, if you're curious about what I look like beyond the caricature of me on the show graphic and want to actually see me in motion, well, you could have seen me on Martin Bailey's 500th episode last December, but if you haven't, go check that out. Anyhow, you might want to check out episode 19 of Matt Granger's show on YouTube called Tog Life. Now, the previous episode, he had the amazing Ben Von Wong. A week later, me. There goes his ratings, huh? Matt has over 410,000 subscribers currently on YouTube, countless others on social media. Well, I guess you can actually count those as well, but you get the idea. Over the course of the last 5 years, Matt has worked incredibly hard and has built something quite impressive over there. I'm honored to have been asked, and if you want to watch us for about an hour or so talk about photography, hit the show notes for the link or head on over to mattgranger.com/toglife, that's T-O-G-L-I-F-E, and you'll find us. Now, equally as awesome is that in a little over 2 weeks from now, myself, my good friend Martin Bailey, and host Frederick Van Johnson will be on episode 461 of This Week in Photo, also known as TWIP. I tell you, like I said on Matt's show, between his show, TWIP, being the first photography podcast allowed in Spotify, Apple featuring us on the front page of podcasts, and this amazing audience that we have, the first 6 months of the Petapixel Photography Podcast have been just incredible. And without you guys, of course, none of this would have happened. After all, without listeners, a podcast is like a tree falling in the forest, right? I mean, who cares? So I thank you all greatly and appreciate each and every one of you, and I think you guys all know that. Definitely head on over to mattgranger.com/toglife and look for episode 19. Hey, it might be good for a laugh or two, I don't know. I'm not used to being on video. Next. If you're in Canada and you're a Canon user who had to wait until now to make a purchase, you're not at all going to be happy to hear that you're now going to pay 20% more for your Canon gear. I know, right? Ouch. As I said on Matt Granger's show, Tog Life, episode 19, it's bad enough that Canadians had to endure a long, cold winter, and now they have to pay 20% more for their gear. Great, huh? But this was unavoidable. The Canadian dollar has done horribly against the US dollar of late, and something just had to give. According to an email sent out to Canon Professional Services members in Canada, they said, quote, "Due to the ever-changing market situation, it has become necessary for Canon Canada Incorporated to increase prices on a selection of DSLRs and lens products effective April 1st. We have done our best to avoid this change for as long as possible, but are no longer able to continue to absorb these costs," end quote. Now, the exchange rate is not at all ideal if you're living in Canada, and if you do, you know that. Until their dollar strengthens, things are just going to be more expensive, unfortunately. What can you do? It is what it is. You know, if this happened in the United States, a $5,000 camera would now cost $6,000. I mean, that's $1,000 that you could have put towards better glass, your kids' college education, or just about anything else. So if you're in Canada and you need certain gear, you really don't have much choice, unfortunately. Eat the additional cost, or you raise your pricing to make up for it, or who knows what. I mean, after all, your costs have gone up. What can you do? Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy, and so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem by making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know exactly who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And their FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pics of your receipt and organize them later so you have them all ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to enjoying your life and doing what you love most. Amazingly, on average, FreshBooks users get paid a full 2 weeks faster when accepting online payments. They cut 2 days a month of administrative tasks, and they double the revenue in the first 24 months. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers. And right now, FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you so much, FreshBooks. My kids love Fujifilm's Instax cameras, and apparently they're not alone because they're selling like crazy. And if you think about it, instant film is magic if you're a teenager. You know, they've grown up in a world where pretty much all photos either reside on their phones, their tablets, or desktop computers, if they even have a computer anymore. Now, I know that they can use an app on their phone and send the pics to Walgreens or whatever to get printed, but that takes time and kids don't have that kind of patience anymore. I know I don't. So with these Instax cameras, they can take a picture and get the instant gratification that they're used to with their phones, except for now they actually have a physical photograph that they can either share with their friends or keep to themselves. My teenage daughter, for instance, has a bunch of these up on her wall of her friends. She loves this thing. Instax Instant Film was Amazon's best-selling item in the camera category this past holiday season, 2015. And since then, they've been selling them like crazy. According to the Wall Street Journal, the Instax cameras are selling in record numbers, and in fact, they're outselling Fujifilm's other cameras. Well, you know, that makes a lot of sense, of course, because they are a lot cheaper than your regular cameras. The company says that it sold some 5 million of the Instax cameras in the fiscal year that ended in March 2016, and they expect to top that in the following year by selling 6.5 million of them. In case you're wondering, Fujifilm sold 1.4 million digital cameras in that year, and the digital camera industry in general has declined 19%, as you may remember. So having all those sales from its Instax cameras and all the film that goes along with it is definitely helping their bottom line. Now, part of this success, like I said, is them appealing to teens who aren't used to having photos in physical forms and getting them like instantly. But the other is what people have referred to as the analog revival. That's not just instant film cameras, but retro-looking film and digital cameras, as well as vinyl records and more. You know, the hipster crowd. They've been selling these cameras for nearly two decades now, actually, which not a lot of people know. Back in 1998, they debuted, and by 2002, they sold over 1 million units, according to the Wall Street Journal. But by 2004, sales plummeted to just 100,000, and for a solid decade or so, nothing really new came out technology-wise for them, and they thought about scrapping it altogether. So here we are now in April 2016 as I record this, and they're making money hand over fist with these things. 30% of their sales is in the United States, 30% in Asia, 15% in Europe, and the other 25% spread across the rest of the world. Well, not in Antarctica, of course. I'm pretty sure you can't get one down there. And unlike Fujifilm's FP100C peel-apart instant film that the Impossible Project founder was trying to save but really isn't going to happen, I'm thinking Instax isn't going away anytime soon. Not as long as there's teenagers out there. Next. As I've said many times here on the show, I'm a huge fan of ThinkTank photo gear. They're incredibly well made, and you just can't kill that stuff. Their modular belt system was essential gear back in my photojournalism days. And if you do a lot of location shooting and you're lugging around a ton of gear, not literally, well, maybe you are, you know how much of a pain it is to keep things together and to quickly transport it, right? Well, that's where their new Production Manager 50 comes in. It's what the company is calling the world's largest rolling photo gear case. And this thing is huge. Huge doesn't even adequately describe it, actually. It's gi-freaking-normous. It's 53.1 inches long, 17.3 inches wide, and 12.6 inches deep. I know, right? Huge. It features shock-absorbing wheels, a lock and cable that keeps the main compartment more secure, and the interior, of course, can be customized six ways to Sunday with crazy Velcro dividers. Of this new case, the company says, quote, "One photographer will now be able to transport what used to take up to at least two assistants. It's easy to move, carry, work out of, and stack among other gear." End quote. This thing is solid too. Depending on which accessories you use, it's 21 to 30 pounds just by itself. That is a lot of weight, so you know this thing is going to be pretty darn beefy. On the front is a large zippered pocket where you can store things like reflectors, umbrellas, cords, cables, and more. And what's really useful are the straps that you can use to attach light stands and tripods on both sides of the case. And there's also handles on four sides so you can more easily move it around. Inside the case, you can fit 3 to 4 flash heads, 2 to 3 power packs, monoblocks, umbrellas, large collapsed soft boxes and modifiers, and large light stands. C-stands, in fact, and those things are huge. If you're into location shooting gear for thousands of dollars already, you won't at all be surprised that the ThinkTank Photo Production Manager 50, which is available right now, goes for $600 US. Hey, you got to protect your gear when hauling it around, of course. And this thing does the trick. Next. As we all know, there are a ton of camera drones out there. They sold a lot of them this past holiday season. And here in the United States, the FAA is working on rules for flying drones over populated areas, and that makes a lot of people nervous. In February 2015, they banned flying drones over populated areas unless you had a special exemption, saying that it was too dangerous to both commercial airlines and the public below. And it is. But according to the Associated Press, a special committee has sent the FAA recommendations that could very well change things or at least make them a little bit more clear. The AP got a hold of the proposed rules, and here's a breakdown of the major points. They're recommending that drones actually be classified into four different categories. The first, drones weighing in at half a pound or less, would have no restrictions so long as the drone manufacturers could prove that there was a 1% or less chance of serious injury should they hit someone. And these are going to be your micro drones, of course. They're going to hit you, they're going to bounce off you, they're not doing any damage, hopefully. In the second category are the drones that we all see out there, DJI Phantoms and the like. They could fly over crowds, but quote, would have to demonstrate through testing that the chance of serious injury was 1% or less, end quote, if the drone fell out of the sky, which of course happens all the time. The third category is work drones, which are used in closed or restricted areas, so that's not going to apply to most people. That's your industrial drones and such. You know, these are drones that are out there working, drones with jobs, basically. These aren't lazy drones. But the fourth category is commercial drones being allowed to fly over congested areas, and those could have, quote, sustained flights, end quote, over crowds. But those operating the drone would have to develop a, quote, congested area plan, end quote, by working with the FAA and the community that they'd be flying over. The manufacturers for drones that would be used commercially would have to prove that there's a 30% or less chance of a person being seriously injured if the drone hit them at, quote, the maximum strength impact possible, end quote. Now, isn't that just wonderful? Okay, so people or companies who are using these commercially, and let's say that they're flying them over crowds at a concert, they get to play with your life and potentially injure you. I mean, a 30% or less chance of being injured, that's still quite high. So that's not very cool, I think. Now, for the drones in the last three categories, those are your bigger drones, not the ones that are half pound or less, they would have to fly 20 feet or more over the heads of people. Now, who's going to measure that? Seriously, how do you get in trouble for that? So it sounds like if this is adopted, you could register your drone and use it for commercial purposes. So long as your drone met those reasonable rules, you'd be good to go. And since the FAA set up this committee, it's not unreasonable to think that they're going to adopt this and give it the green light not too long from now. After all, think about all the taxes that the government is going to be able to collect now with all those people out there using drones commercially. It's not just about safety, of course. It's also about commerce. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 62 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm LensShark. That's LenSShark. And also, don't forget, if you want to help support this show, you got a small business, go ahead and head on over to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter Petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. You've got a 30-day free trial available to you, and you can claim it right now. And if you've made it this far, of course, head on over to mattgranger.com and look for the latest episode, episode 19, if you want to have a good laugh or two. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 63. Well, it's F8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.